When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to More Than a Muse. I'm Stani.
And I'm Sadie. And oh boy, am I so excited to be here for this episode.
I know.
Episode today.
Only has it been like a little while for us because
we took a week break,
but we also had another episode pre-recorded. So I haven't recorded with you in like 10 days.
Oh my gosh, it does. That's why something's been feeling missing in my life. It's been a little while. Okay.
I was like, our regular conversations. Yeah, I had the flu for 2 weeks and things were just really chaotic. And both of us were like, we need a minute.
Yes.
But now we get to come back on the most exciting note ever because a Taylor Swift album dropped today when we are recording. Yes.
And like, today, sorry, we're a Taylor Swift podcast. We're always a little bit of a Taylor Swift podcast, it seems. We'll use any excuse to bring her up. You know, usually we talk about women in the arts and history and feminism and all the intersections of that. And we actually are going to be talking about that today, too.
Yeah.
Obviously. But like,
I was like,
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I was like, it's going to be history adjacent, but
sorry,
we got a very history adjacent album. So
we did.
Kind of ties in pretty perfectly.
There were a lot of call outs of women in the Taylor Swift album. Mm-hmm. And what do we do on this podcast but shout out women artists from history? And I mean, there's two women in the album that got shout outs that we've already done episodes on.
Yes, which was so fun to realize, like, as you're listening, I was like, oh, we have an episode on Patti Smith. Oh, we have an episode on Stevie Nicks.
So. Yes. Like, I know all about them.
So that was really fun, especially because we did those this year. So it was kind of funny, like, having that happen right around the time it needed to. Mm-hmm.
Right in time. So if you've been a longtime listener, congratulations. You were very prepared for this album. Also, I'm a little bit nervous. I'm kind of losing my voice because before the album came out, I went to like a Taylor Swift release party and it was live music and I was not being smart. And also when I am excited, I speak loudly, which means that I was hurting my voice and I'm tired.
That's
because
fair.
I was up until 3 a.m. because Miss Taylor Swift dropped a double album.
Thank heavens. So grateful.
And I'm thankful for it. But I'm just really interested to see where my voice is at the end of this. And I'm apologizing in advance as it slowly deteriorates. But I'm hoping that the fellow Swifties listening are like right there with me so that it's not a problem.
Yes. You can just lean in closer to the mic and whisper.
I will. Yes. I'm going to like be very intensely whispering in a way I don't normally. Anyways.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, it'll be okay. It'll be worth it.
It'll be all worth it in the end. Mm-hmm. I want to give some shout outs to different women artists. But before we dive into some history elements, before we just fully talk tortured poets, overview, did you like the album, Stani?
I loved it. Mm-hmm. I know that this one is a controversial one. I've had
it's
some
a divisive
mixed reviews. But I feel like it was really, it feels like if Folklore and Evermore had a baby with Midnights.
It is so Folklore and Evermore coded, except it's just about her. It's not under the guise of fictitious stories anymore.
Which is so weird to me that like all of these critic reviews are coming out and they're like,
yes,
she could have used an editor for her poets or something. And I'm like, this is literally what Folklore and Evermore were, and everyone was obsessed. So
it's
I don't really understand. And a little bit more poppy at parts.
Yes. Oh, I'm so with you. Also, let's look at what she herself described as the purpose of the album, which was a very cathartic, needed, like, processing of what happened to her. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think she set out to write the most objectively best, I'm putting that in quotations, you know, album of her career. She said, oh, I'm a songwriter and I'm an artist. what do I do when I'm in pain and I'm feeling things? I write songs and I make art. And that's what she did. And she shared it with us. There was one review I read that was so mean because it was like, yeah, maybe she needed to write the songs, but did we really need to hear them? And I think that's so mean.
That's so mean.
Like, by that definition, should anybody share their art ever?
Yeah.
Isn't that what art is, kind of?
That's what it's for.
Not even kind of. That's what it's for.
Kate, everyone can relate to a lot of those feelings and those moments when you just kind of need to like word vomit, basically. And I'm like, are some of the lyrics cringy? Yes. But I feel like she's looking back on these relationships and being like, that was so cringy. Like, I thought we were going to be together forever. Like, what the heck? So it's like, also, I feel like that's how you look back on life. You look back at it and you're like, that was wrong. You were a liar. That was so cringe. Why did I believe that? Oh my gosh, I'm ridiculously gullible. I'm angry. Like, that's what it felt like, with someone looking back on like a really hard period of their life and being like, what the heck?
Literally. Or like also being like, wow, I used to like that about you. In retrospect, that's so cringy. Like, in the Torture Poets Department song, she's like, who uses a typewriter anyway? Like, she's so making fun of him, and like, not even making fun of him. I don't want to talk about the gossip. Like, I don't necessarily like want to analyze who all the songs are about.
Well, I mean, because to be perfectly honest, most of them felt like a blend of her two exes. And I feel like there's been a lot of focus on it being about Maddie Healy. And I don't feel like it necessarily all was.
Totally. I can see that as well.
Yeah.
But I didn't listen to any leaks, but I was on the internet more than I should have been after the leaks came out. And I did see the lyric of, you smoked and ate 7 bars of chocolate. We declared Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist, which, like, that is objectively a crazy line. But I saw that and I was like, oh no, I'm nervous. I'm nervous. I called my husband almost in legitimate distress of like, what am I going to do if this album's bad? Like, what am I going to do? All of those leakers, you don't get it, because I believed you. All of this, like, oh, it's not good. It's just like Midnights. No, it's not. If you think Tortured Poets is just like Midnights, I am questioning the way you listen to music at this point.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just way more similar to Folklore and Evermore than Midnights. It has some of the synth back that had Midnights there too.
Yes.
Like, and I've heard some people say that like the album is very one note, and I kind of get that, but I like it. It feels like a collection, which is what she wrote, totally. Like an anthology. Like, if you're putting a poetry collection together, you wouldn't do vastly different poems. You would kind of create one that all fits together. So I feel like it's exactly what she said it would be.
Totally. And there is variation. I do think the variation is a lot more subtle, but like, can you imagine if there was like a 22 type track just slapped in the middle of that album? It wouldn't have worked at all. Like,
it was like the poppiest song on this is I Can Do It With a Broken Heart, which is objectively one of the saddest songs too.
Wait, okay. Do you have any like immediate top like favorites?
Oh my gosh. Okay. My friend asked me for my top 5 today and I sent her back 10. Like, I'm having the hardest time with this one. Because here's the thing.
Do you like the standard version or the second half of the album more, do you think? The full anthology. A lot of people are saying they'd the last 16 or better. I actually love the standard album alone. And I'm actually kind of just marinating and sitting with that album right now. And I think that once I've like digested it, I'm going back and I've listened to all of them, for the record. Like,
That's hard. I loved the standard alone. Mm-hmm. And I think I would have been fine with that. I do love a lot of the bonus ones too. I feel like I'm pretty evenly distributed. But you also have to realize about me, Evermore and Midnights are two of my top favorite albums of all time. So the fact that this
is for you, then.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, this, I am obsessed. Like,
I'm so happy.
The historical references, the imagery that she adds in, like the way that she plays with words, like, this is mine. Like, I love it. And a lot of things that I've heard people say that they hate, like the guitar in The Black Dog, or like the weird dun 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 in Florida. Like, those are some of my favorite parts.
I was screaming. I love Florida. I think that song is so good. I love her and Florence's voices together.
Same. And her and Post Malone's. I feel like both of their voices blend. I know. It was so good. I'm like, I want them to do like a melodic duet together. Like, it was beautiful. Yeah.
Give me more collaboration, please. Yeah.
So, okay. Here's my top 10.
Okay, I mean, there's 31 songs, so that's actually valid. So
like the fact that I have 10, I feel like, and I could narrow it down eventually, but like these were ones that as
are
they played,
ranked?
I liked them. No.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Just I don't think I can ever rank songs. That's to be perfectly honest.
So fair.
I'm not very objective when it comes to this. Okay, so I can do it with A Broken Heart because I wish I would have had that anthem when I was trying to finish school. In the middle of a divorce, because I felt that in so many ways. That one's so good. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Plus the lyrics are just heartbreaking. Who's Afraid of Little Old Me?
Yes.
Yeah. It's so good. Smallest Man Who Ever Lived.
Oh, adore. My gosh. I think that's the most scathing. I think The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived is the meanest song she's ever written.
Oh, 100%. My jaw, as I was listening, just kept dropping more and more and more because I was like, ooh, ouch. Ooh, ouch. Like, that hurts. The Alchemy, which I think is the cutest Travis song, and everyone's talking about the high school one, and this one is way cuter.
This one's way cuter. Also, listen, some people think the lyrics are cringy. I actually feel like, considering how cringy it could have been, I'm like, wow, she made a football reference. Not cringy for me. Granted,
and it wasn't
my threshold
bad.
Of Taylor Swift cringe. People be like, oh, that's cringe. I never know what you guys are talking about because I love it. So
yeah, I loved that one. Especially, I get chills every time she sings the one, where's the trophy? He just comes running over to me. And I'm like, it's so cute. Because you can tell she just feels so valued in her relationship. I just love it. I think it's that's so one of her nice. Cutest. Clara Bow, obviously, which I know we'll be talking more about, but I love that one. The Black Dog, Cassandra, Daddy, I Love Him, Florida, and Albatross.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good list.
It was so hard.
Okay, I don't even know. I don't have a list yet, so I'm just going to count 10. Down Bad, love.
That one is
fresh
really
out
good.
Fresh Out the Slammer is unfortunately a little bit too relatable to me, except I just locked mine down and married him. My first call after, let me think. Who's Afraid of Little Old Me? Absolutely. The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. I loved I Hate It Here, actually. That's the only song that, like, as I was listening to, like, I was emotional. Like, that made me feel things, and that was like, oh no, I'm feeling things. Peter was crazy. Going Back, I loved So Long London as well.
That one is really good. Yeah,
and I can't remember if I said Florida, but I loved it. LOML. Oh, LOL. Hello. Oh. Love of My Life.
Hello.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I so sad. The Prophecy also very cool. And The Manuscript, I just thought was such a really cool way to end it. Like,
yes, I agree.
Tied it all up so nicely. Ugh, and I do like that she's detaching herself from it. And I read like her prologue online. I do want to go get a physical copy. Also, did you know that there's a poem by Stevie Nicks about Taylor?
You said that. And now I want it. I haven't bought one of her physical ones in a while because they just have been selling out so ridiculously fast. And then she never had a version of Midnights that had all of the songs I wanted on it, which actually kind of pissed me off. So,
valid.
But I feel like as long as she doesn't release any more bonus tracks for this one, which she very well might, at least the full one has everything.
Yes,
which would be
with
nice.
The manuscript ending it. But yes, I think that's very cool. She very much signed this of like, whoa, that was crazy. We're done. Mm-hmm. Like, we are tying that year up into a bow and moving on with my life.
It made me feel a lot of sympathy that I feel like I didn't quite understand in the moment. Cause we were all watching her thinking like, oh, she's having the best year of her life. Like, she's on tour, like all this stuff. But before like the whole Travis high of it all, like I don't think I realized how crippling the breakup was for her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I got it, and I think we could kind of tell from some moments on stage, but, like, I don't think I fully comprehended.
Because she looked like she was having a great time. Like,
it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I think that's why I can do it with a broken heart, especially because it's, like...
I love that one.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Or she's, like, I, like, crumbled to the floor as the crowd is shouting more, and it's just, like... Oh, sorry.
Sorry. That was me. Yeah. That was me.
Fully. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, we didn't mean to do that to you. Like,
I mean, you know what? We paid her at least for that. Like, she got her paycheck for that. And you know what? I don't know if it was worth it. She can tell us, but like... At the end of the day, we paid good money for it, at least.
Yeah. And I do think you could kind of, you could tell in a lot of her lyrics that that was one of the things that made it really hard on her, is that she was kind of talking to Joe, like, did you have to ruin my summer? Like, yeah. I had this huge glittering, like, tour planned ahead of me, and you had to do that, like, right before it to make everything mm-hmm. hard for me. Kind of like a last stabbing of the knife in their relationship to be like, and I'm gonna make your tour suck. Like,
yeah, I've seen a lot of people talking about this, and I fully agreed of this feels like the most like Taylor Swift that she's actually allowing us to see, like actual Taylor Swift, and not as much as Taylor Swift TM, you know, trademarked. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, you know, sure, there's still all the releases and the single, you know, like she's still trying to have this scale of success, like through all of like the marketing schemes. But at the same time, I do feel like the music is a lot more like, oh, this is like actually Taylor Swift, which like now, like when you listen to Midnights, I'm realizing that like with Folklore and Evermore, she was like, no, these are fictional stories. And she really pushed that because she didn't probably want people reading into the fact that she was writing songs like Tolerate It, you yeah. know?
About a relationship that she was still trying to salvage.
About a relationship she was still in. Yeah. And then with Midnights, she was like, no, these are like songs throughout the course of my life. And I remember people being like, that's a really cool concept, Taylor, but like, I don't feel like the concept landed. Mm-hmm. And now I'm thinking that that's because actually she was maybe being like, okay, well, here are some songs that I wrote about the past, but there's also Joe's songs here, you know, that like yeah. maybe in the marketing, we can make it so people don't think it's current autobiography because I have to protect this relationship because I still want yes. it so bad. And now she's like, well, you know, like everyone yeah. knows that one didn't work out. So now she doesn't like have to hide under the guise of like making sure people aren't reading into her current relationship too much yeah. with the sad songs that she's writing. I feel like Midnights makes so much more sense now than it's it did at the album. Time. It's a breakup album. Yeah. And yeah. it's not the, oh, these are 13 nights across my life. No, this was your breakup album. This was the unraveling of your current relationship. Yeah. Where you're reminiscing.
I was like, if you want to talk about, I was like, there was definitely some that are about her past, like would have, totally. Could have, should have and stuff. But yeah. like, those were bonus tracks. Like they weren't even a part of the, yeah. the main part.
Like,
of,
I guess yeah, Maroon, so, maybe like, yeah. And Question. But like,
yeah.
Bejeweled, Lavender Haze, like even the fact that she's yeah. thinking about the people that are like Midnight Rain. It's like, why are you thinking about, I don't know. It's just, it the yeah. whole... It makes so much more sense of like, oh, she was maybe in denial about the ending of that. So.
Well, yeah. Well, and even maybe not in denial, but just realizing like, oh, we're hitting a rough patch. I need to write about this, but I don't necessarily
but I don't
know
want
where
people
this
to
is going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's like, why would you want to put more pressure on an already fragile relationship? Like, yeah, that's
by telling everyone
the hardest parts.
That you're struggling.
Yeah.
yeah.
Especially with the way that she writes songs and like, it's so personal. That's like, how do you avoid people thinking that, like, reading a lot into it when maybe you don't
totally. I mean, and like, to. I'm a songwriter and I'm not like, I'm comparing myself to Taylor Swift here, but it's like, I've also been in a relationship that I'm very happy in. And we've been together for 6 years. And sometimes when I'm like drawing from inspiration, it's like, I do tend to go things to the past because it's like, I'm fine to air out my past. Like, I'm fine to air out the things that have already happened to me. It feels mm-hmm. weird to, like, air out a rough, like, a fight that me and my husband had. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I'm still in that. That feels very, like, I respect Jordan. I wouldn't want people to think anything mean of him.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I can relate to that of like, oh, you know, an intense emotion I had in a moment that would cause me to write a song. You think that. You think that's just all mm-hmm. it is. So you want to protect that. But like, I don't care. I'll write songs on my fast all day long.
But I'm like, but you and Jordan also have like a good relationship. Like, thank imagine you. Being in a bad one yeah. and then not being yeah. able to like voice that. True. Like, I feel like that would be even harder. Cause like, you're very happily married. I can attest to that.
I really am. Yes. I swear.
So it's like the fights you have with Jordan are probably not even like enough to actually inspire like a full.
No, that's true. I've never once song. Been like, yeah, that's yeah. so valid. I've never been moved to write a song like Tolerate. Mm-hmm. Thank you for validating my relationship. And that's very
whereas,
true.
Like, yeah. Whereas like, I can't even imagine she's in this 6-year long relationship with now we can tell with a guy who like, I'm sorry, but like, I never really was the biggest fan of him because I kind of was just like, is she doing what she wants to do or is she doing what he wants her to do?
He was definitely doing like, what he wanted her to do.
Yeah. And I think you could kind of tell that he didn't really want to be like, oh, I'm with Taylor Swift. He wanted to be like, oh yeah, I am, but like, you can't be a part of it kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And then having her write like really personal songs. So like knowing that that's how your boyfriend feels about it. And then you have all these intense emotions from like catastrophic things that are happening in this really important relationship in your yeah. life, and then not wanting to let the public know, even though you like need to write it.
This is like how you write. And I think that the Tortured Poets album kind of felt like it felt so cathartic. And that's what to me, like some of the lyrics were clunky. Some of it did feel unpolished, but how would it be a cathartic, like pent up release if wasn't?
She tried to make it all sound pretty. Yeah.
Yeah. Like mm-hmm. that would have felt so much more inauthentic to me.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have liked that as much. I don't think the concept would have landed as well as it did. And also, I just feel like this album is for the Taylor Swift fans. If someone came to me and said, I really want to get into Taylor Swift, I'd be like, cool. We're not starting at Tortured Poets. Like,
no.
Yeah. That is AP level Taylor Swift. But that doesn't mean that it's bad. It's just, if you love what Taylor Swift does, you'll love this. If you don't already love what Taylor Swift does, it might not be for you. And I can see that. But.
And I could understand, like, I know she talks a lot about how she does, like, the different pens where she writes her songs. If you're, like, a huge glitter gel pen fan, like, this album probably isn't going to land that much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's okay. She'll be back to that, I'm sure. But like her quill and fountain pen songs are always my favorite. So like we said, this album was basically written for me.
It was. I'm so happy for you. Also, a lot of the leakers, I hate them. They're like, oh,
I didn't see any of it. I'm so glad I missed it.
It's not good. It's nothing like Folklore Evermore. And it's so
that's
much
not
like
true.
It. It's so
there's some
like
lines
it.
In there that are so clever. I like literally they're so incredible. Like I don't know how you could look at it and be like, that's not poetry. Like it is. Because some of the lyrics are just crazy.
One of my favorite ones, it's not even necessarily the most poetic, but just it's a great song lyric of once I fix me, he's gonna miss me. That just goes hard. I feel that. Going back to like what people expect of it, a lot of people are like, she needs to stop working with Jack Antonoff. It's getting redundant. She needs to like try new things. Again, the point of this album was to get something off her chest. It was not to expand her own artistry. Mm-hmm. It was not like all of these things. Why would she go to anyone else but her most trusted collaborator that she knows she's going to like feel safe with and be able to create with? Also, I do feel like there's a lot of different things going on here.
Oh yeah, there was way more, like, believe it or not, there was like quite a few rock influences in this, which I feel like also fits because she referenced like Patti Smith and Stevie Nicks, and she had Florence and the Machine. Like, she did some weird, quirky, fun stuff with it. It's
she really
just,
did.
Yeah, did every song have a traditional chorus? No. Like, she was trying some things that were different.
I think
but
she
I
was
like
pretty experimental. Something that I thought was so cool with this album is I feel like she was using her voice as an instrument in a way that she hasn't before, even just with the way she was delivering lines, and she would like sometimes whisper sing. And I just feel like she was so conscious of that in a way that I hadn't heard before. I'm, you know, I am a singer, so I'm very like hyper aware of those things, but I was like, oh, this, like, she's using her voice as such an instrument. And, like, obviously she always does. She is mm-hmm. a singer. But as, I don't know, it was really cool to, like, hear the different things she was kind of subtly trying and how she was using just the way she sang it as a tool to express the emotion as opposed to just strictly the words themselves, which has definitely been the thing she focuses on historically. So
I agree. I wanted to read this part. It's from "But Daddy, I Love Him." And then I'm like, for anyone who says that this is not poetry, she says, "I'll tell you something about my good name. It's mine alone to disgrace. I don't cater to all these vipers dressed in empath's clothing. God save the most judgmental creeps who say they want what's best for me. Sanctimoniously performing soliloquies I'll never see. Thinking it can change the beat of my heart when he touches me and counteract the chemistry and undo the destiny. You ain't gotta pray for me and my wild boy and all this wild joy." Are you kidding? Sanctimoniously performing soliloquies? Like, they're like, oh no, this isn't anything like Evermore in folklore. Like, no, have you heard the word sanctimoniously before?
I mean, before, but I don't use it in my sentences very often in my daily life, I'll admit.
Yeah.
I agree. It's very Evermore coded. Also, another thing that I wanted to bring up, I've seen a lot of TikToks about how, like, I see TikToks or people talking about the fact that men will assume that women are dumb and said that women are being funny or like that they're being purposely witty or purposely like conscious making a joke. And I feel like a lot of people were listening to the Tortured Poets album and they were like, oh, Taylor Swift is so cringe. Taylor Swift is so dumb. All these things. And I'm like, no, Taylor Swift is being funny. Like,
yeah,
this is being said ironically. And this is like being said tongue in cheek with humor. Like, sure, maybe she's being genuine, but she is aware of the humor here. And this isn't me trying to like make something out of nothing. Like, it is so clearly to me humor. Like,
yeah,
I just hate that like impulse of like, oh, she's cringe, she's dumb. No, she's funny and she's being witty and she's laughing at her situation and laughing at herself.
Oh, 100%. And I think a lot of the phrases too that are the most cringy is she's making fun of her exes in a way too. Like, a lot of the phrases you can tell she's like, I'm saying this because they'll get it kind of situation. And I feel like that makes it even more fitting that it's like, it's a scathing
totally
song. She's like, she's getting mad at their intelligence and like what they would do and say.
And like, it's fine if you just don't think Taylor Swift is funny, but like, call it what it is. You don't think she's funny, not she's cringe, she's dumb.
Yeah.
It's just not your sense of humor, and that's fine.
No, I agree.
But she's being witty and funny.
She's using, I really appreciated
irony.
One of the ladies at work came up and she was like, how are you liking the album? Because she knows that I'm a Taylor Swift fan. And I was like, I actually really love it. I was like, a lot of people are saying like a lot of stuff about it, but like, I love it. And she was like, honestly, that's okay. She's like, people can say all these things. A critic can say these things. She's like, I don't really listen to her, but like, there's no way that you can deny that she's a genius and she knows what she's doing. And I feel like that's so true that it's like, regardless of how, was it a little annoying to see every single brand post some version of a reference to it? Well, yeah. I mean, and I saw someone talking about like, is she overhyped? And I was kind of like, well, no, because she kind of deserves it at this point, don't you think? I'm like, I can say that it's a little, like the hype gets a little annoying even as a fan, but I don't think that
even
this...
as a fan, I do sometimes have to disengage. Like, and I haven't been as engaged in the, like the lore of this album and like the Easter eggs and the clues. Like, I kind of disengaged from that. It was less fun for me.
No, I agree. I've kind of been avoiding TikTok.
Same.
Because I just don't really want to hear it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's part of it too, is that like, I get that people are going to have different opinions on it and that's okay. But like, I just feel like this album was so immensely personal that I was like, I honestly don't really care anymore what the critics have to say.
Also, who cares? Like, it is her 11th album. I think people saying Taylor Swift needs an editor. Okay, first off, her last full-length album that was new material was 2 years ago. It does feel like we've gotten a lot from her, but they are, first off, we are hearing re-recordings and we're hearing vault tracks. Vault tracks was her editing herself. You know, like, those are songs yeah. that did not make the original album. So yeah, it maybe feels like we're hearing a lot of like songs that aren't as good as others, because by definition, that is what the vault tracks are. They are the tracks mm-hmm. that she deemed not good enough to make the standard edition. Some of the times I hear those vault tracks and I'm like, valid. I see why you didn't yeah. put that on there. But other times, you know, there's a couple songs that I'm like, how did this not make the original album? My point though is like the whole like Taylor needs an editor. No.
Like she had one. We all said no. Like yeah. she took out the vault tracks and we all said give them back.
Exactly. And like yeah. at this point, she knows that her fans want to see all of it. Her fans mm-hmm. want to see the less good tracks. Like you said, the fans yeah. want the vault tracks. We want to see everything. We don't want her to release 10, 15 songs and then years later find out she had 15 other ones. Like mm-hmm. as fans, we want to hear them, even if the work itself isn't as like pretty and perfect, you know?
Yeah.
And I think in a way she's allowing her fans to be more a part of the creative process in a way with her songwriting, because she's saying, I'm going to give it to you, even if it's not quote unquote perfect. And like, yeah. here's the thing. Like I said, like she's doing all the things that I love her for. She's mm-hmm. having fun references that we're going to talk about Clara Bow in a second. Like she's doing fun wordplay. It's cool melodies. I love what she does with Jack Antonoff. Like,
yeah.
I want more of it. Why
and Aaron
I,
Desmer?
Why would I not want more of what I already love? Hello.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, it's just kind of like she knows that we like it, so she did more of it, and I'm sure she'll experiment further. But like this, yeah, it was like this was something that she just felt like she had to do, and like why not do it the way you want to instead of trying to like
and the way that the people who already love you would want you to do mm-hmm. it too.
Yeah,
and everyone that I know in my life who's like, no, I'm a Taylor Swift fan and not like passive about it. They love the album because that's who yeah. the album, I like, she knows what her demographic likes. And she said, cool, mm-hmm. this is what I do. Here you go, guys. And yeah. I'm so fed. I'm full. And I'm yeah. going to keep eating because there's 31 songs to digest.
I know, right? And I also want to say too, like, if you don't get too overly critical and you just like listen to it, it's also just beautiful.
It's like, just beautiful.
Yeah, if you don't sit there and think, well, I don't think Charlie Puth is a very good artist. Like, if you're not like really diving into it and being like, well, that was annoying or something, like it's just objectively a beautiful album.
Yeah. And yeah. like, we're acting like there's so many cringeworthy moments. Like, listen, the Charlie Puth line, that's crazy. But like, you know,
I think the only other one was like, he takes the ring off my middle finger and puts it on the one that you put wedding rings on. But then I'm like, but what's that ring? It's called your ring finger. Like, how redundant would it be to say you take the ring off of my middle finger and put it on my ring finger?
Yeah. I see the conundrum she was in with that line. Yeah. As a writer, like, I've been
honestly
there.
So like I feel like she didn't do that bad of a job considering.
Well, that's it. Like there's like an Ed Sheeran song where it's like, I could do without a tan on my left hand where the fourth finger meets my knuckle.
Oh yeah.
She's not the first one who's describing the ring finger in a weird way. Like they're trying to get around it.
If we don't have another name for it, it's very weird.
Yeah. I the one you put wedding rings on, I was like, okay, sure.
But again, I was like, roundabout. I get it. Yeah. I was like, you're trying to explain the significance.
She oh was my spilling. Gosh. She was just journal entering in that. But
I'm trying to think of what the other ones that everyone thought were cringy.
I saw people not liking the lines of like, my friends smell like weed and little babies or something.
I thought that was perfect.
I love that because it just shows like, and I relate to that too. I feel like I have friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm married, so it's not like I'm like Miss Outsider here, but like I do have friends that are like, you know, trying to fully pursue being a musician right now, and others who are literally having babies. And sometimes it's like, whoa, yeah. I'm like watching two lives here. And it's mm-hmm. weird as an adult.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't, my single friends don't smoke, but like, I get what she was saying where it's like, mm-hmm. they're either in this like party single stage or in this like, I have children state. And like how weird it is to exist in between that. Like,
oh, one thing I thought is like, I don't think she cares about hits on this album. So
yeah,
she doesn't. It's fine. I think she's still going to try and get it with like the 199 CDs for Fortnite. What did you think of that song, by the way? Did you watch the music video?
I like it. Yeah. I loved the music video more than I like the song alone.
I agree. I'm surprised that's the one she chose.
Yeah. But it's kind of
it's fun. Cool.
Yeah.
I like the song, but I realized that was the single. I was like, okay.
Yeah, it was really different. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. I like it. It is kind of, I think it's one of the most different singles that she's had. But then again, like, we know that she doesn't usually choose like the one that the fans would pick for a single.
True.
And I feel like the music video with Post Malone was amazing. So if they just did it for the video concept, I would kind of get it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And it was very a la More Than a Muse, March Madness.
Music video. That's what I was thinking. Like, okay. Also, all the reference to like asylums and They Took Me Away and the music video, I was just like, feminine rage, mental health, the way we treat angry women. Whoa.
Like, if only that's to the bed.
What we had been doing and studying the whole last month. Go check up on that if you want to.
Yeah, seriously. And like so many references to like the 1930s and like the industrial age and like, like she knew what she was doing there.
She did her homework. One thing about Taylor is she'll do her homework.
Oh, did you think it was cringe when she said, "Now I'm down bad crying at the gym. Everything comes out teenage petulance." I love that line.
She's also calling it, she's saying, "I'm being a teenager." Like, she's making fun of herself. Also, people who are like, "So high school, those lyrics are so cringe. Like, you're 34. I'm like, read the title of the song. The title and the whole point of the song is that she feels like this, like she's so in love right now that she's so high school. So are the lyrics cringy and teenagerish? Yes.
Yes.
Hello? That is the theme of the song.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
And then everyone got mad that she referenced Grand Theft Auto.
That's the one in So High School. I thought that line was hilarious. Again, not cringe.
I did too.
Funny. Funny. And I'm not like,
an issue.
I'm not making excuses for her. I can say with utmost confidence, if I sat down in front of Taylor Swift and I said that Grand Theft Auto line, she would start laughing. I know this.
Yeah. With
certainty. And this isn't me being parasocial. Oh,
100%.
I swear.
Yep. Oh my gosh. I also like Love of My Life or Loss of My Life, whatever. She says, "Mr. Steal Your Girl, then make her cry." And I don't really get the reference that she's making there. And but someone was like, "That's so annoying." And then I was like, I think it's probably one of those like inside joke situations where she's telling whoever it's for that it's for them.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that either. But
yeah, because I was like, "Mr. Steal You a Girl, then make her cry." I don't know. And then apparently this one people thought was bad. "Whether I'm going to be your wife or going to smash up your bike, I haven't decided yet." I loved that one.
It's unhinged. Again,
I'm like, it's like, whether I hate you or want to be with you forever, I haven't decided.
I don't know.
I think that they're funny, like you said. And
again,
I don't have any problem.
In the prologue, too, she like says, "I'm pleading the case of temporary insanity." She's like, these are her insanity lyrics.
Yes.
You think they're going to be like, "I got to make sure I'm not being weird about this." No.
I think that's even why she's doing a lot of the asylum references, because she's saying like, if I was a woman back in the 1930s, after everything I went through this summer, I would have been institutionalized.
Like, my brain would have been lobotomized. It's fine.
Which is like, fair. I get that. Like, I've been there.
I feel that too, Taylor. I also probably should have been institutionalized one or two times in my life.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, I think it's so relatable in so many ways, and it's okay if people don't get it. And I think she's fine with that.
I'm really intrigued to see how she promotes it in the coming week, Like, maybe I won't, I don't know. I'm interested to see if it changes my opinion on the album. But as it exists right now, like, you know, I wonder if the more she talks about it, I'll be curious to how much outward publicity that she does to, you know, people that just like aren't already the fans. I don't know. Yeah. I'm just interested to see.
I do wonder, because she didn't do any like pre-album publicity really, other than the not pop-up really shop. Like Spotify, yeah, and thing, right?
Again, that's all like clues for the Taylor Swift fans that want them. I mean, yeah. I guess it was shoved down general public throat, but
yeah, she is going on like iHeartRadio to talk about the songs, I think, this weekend.
Oh, I heard some of the clips that people were sharing on Twitter.
Yeah,
that was cool.
But I don't think she's gonna do like Jimmy Fallon or something with this one.
Yeah, if she were to do any, she's kind of friends with him, I think. But again, like, I'd be so interested in the way she talks about it.
Yeah, that's
true. Or is she just going to go back on tour and, like, let it speak for itself?
I don't know. I think she could do either, honestly. This one's fun. This one's going to be up there for me. I really like it. It has all of the, like, it has all of the formulas that I love about her songs. So
I'm here. On board.
Yeah.
I'm so on board.
1,000%.
Anything else, or should we finish up the episode with some references to Clara and Cassandra?
Let's talk about them, because these are some of my favorite songs. I love the references that she had going on here, so I'm very excited.
Totally. First off, too, there's a lot of just like names in this album. Some of them are definitely people from her personal life, Jack and Lucy. Some are just fill-in names like Sarah and Hannah. I listened to this album with my friend Hannah. Shout out Hannah. And she was like, oh my gosh, my name's in a Taylor Swift song. Good for her.
Then I will like say, Sarah, I feel bad Jane for Marcus. All the Amys.
Oh, yeah. But we know what that's about.
Yeah, we do. It's not really about you, Amy. It's okay.
And again, an example of Taylor Swift being funny, we're literally an F you, Amy, or whatever the song's called.
It's called Thank You, Amy, but.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah. That's hilarious. Okay, oops. She says that I've even changed your name and any distinguishable features. And then she capitalizes Kim. Like, that's so funny. I'm sorry. That's so funny. Yeah,
it's hilarious.
Anyways, a lot of names in this album. Some of the references that we've already mentioned, Patti Smith, a woman in rock, a poet, an incredible songwriter. We did a whole episode in January about just women in rock, and she was one of the four women that we shouted out in that episode. And now I think we have to, you know, eventually do a full episode on her. Also part of our Women in Rock month, we did Stevie Nicks, like you mentioned. And then there is Clara Bow, which before I had seen the track list, I did not hear of Clara Bow, which is a fun thing we talk about on this podcast a lot, is just when we think that we've discovered all of the forgotten women artists, and there's another one.
We're not even close. I've given up on saying that we're never, even.
I know. I mean, granted, after the first year of us doing this, I was like, oh no, this is a thread that we can pull for the rest of all time. And so it was so fun for me to discover this. And so usually we do a full episode on people where it's 45 minutes, as you all know, if you're listeners. Today, you're just getting the abridged version of Clara Bow's life because I knew we were going to spend a lot of time talking about this album. But Clara Bow is an American actress who rose to stardom during the silent film era of the 1920s and was able to make the transition to talkies, which I think is very cute that that's what it was once called. And what I think's cool is like she is literally the original It Girl, because she was in a movie called It and appeared as like a shop girl, and it gave her the nickname the It Girl. So like that's where that phrase comes from.
Yeah, so she literally is the original It Girl.
Literally is the original one. Like, that's where calling someone the It Girl came from, is Clara Bow is the original.
That's so cool.
Which, I do love that song, and it's so cool. And, you know, funny how Taylor Swift is self-aware of the fact of like, oh, you're the next Clara Bow. Oh, you're the next Stevie Nicks. Oh, you're the next Taylor Swift, you know?
Yeah.
And I think she was very clever in this reference. But yeah, so she kind of went on to personify the Roaring Twenties and was a sex symbol at that time. She appeared in 46 silent films and 11 talkies, including such hits, which, you know, I'm not personally as like knowledgeable about my silent films. Yeah. Well, yes. But, you know, like, I'm not like, oh, duh, the silent film Man Trap. Okay. It came out in 1926. It and Wings. She was named first box office draw in 1928 and 1929 and second in 27 and 30. So her presence in a motion picture said to have ensured investors by odds of almost 2-1 a safe return. At the apex of her stardom, she received more than 45,000 fan letters in a single month in January of 1929.
I saw an article that she like went insane. Are you going to?
Yes. Okay.
Oh, okay.
There's so much about her, which something that I love is I went just to the Wikipedia page and I checked the history because I was curious. And the day after or the day of that the track list was released, boom, that Wikipedia page got full. Those Swifties did their research. And
yes.
I just think that's very cool that I don't know what it looked like before, but I know that it got a lot longer.
Yeah.
Because of her. So
I love that.
I'll go into detail, but she married Rex Bell, an actor, in 1931. And 2 years after that, she actually retired from acting and became a rancher in Nevada. But she had a very troubled life as a child. Her mother had a fall or, yes, yeah, something like that, where she suffered from like epilepsy and psychosis because of a severe head injury. Yeah, it was a second story window that she fell out of. So from like really young, she was really having to take care of her mother during her seizures. But there was also like these psychotic episodes where Clara would wake up with her mother like attempting to like kill her.
Oh, gosh.
Really, really scary things that happened. And so that kind of was like the precursor of her life. And eventually she was able to get into movies. There was like a local competition. I'm so paraphrasing, but you know, we would usually go into more detail. But she honestly, like in a way, kind of reminds me of like, you know, the Taylor Swift of just like, she just knew she wanted to be in movies. And like the first couple people that hired her were like, oh no, you're too fat. You don't look, you know, you don't have the right look. You're too this, you're too that. You don't have the right connections. And she just kind of kept being like, no, give me a chance. She got her chance. And then she was able to just really be successful of it and then, you know, become literally an icon. And then she herself, yes, like you said, started to show symptoms of psychiatric illness as well and became socially withdrawn. And then also like she refused to socialize with her husband, but she also refused to let him leave the house alone, which was really sad. I don't really know how true this all is. I was seeing a lot of different things online about like, oh, her husband abandoned her and that's why she went crazy. This is sad though, too. Like, I mean, trigger warning, of course, because you know what we're talking about. But in 1944, Clara attempted suicide, and a note was found in which she said she preferred death to public life because her husband was running for the U.S. House of Representatives and she did not want to go back to being a public life after that.
Man.
But in 1949, she checks into the Institute of Living to be treated for her chronic insomnia. And she was actually diagnosed with schizophrenia, but apparently she didn't actually experience auditory or visual hallucinations. So I'm not really sure exactly like what happened, but like she went through a lot. So with the things with her own mother and then with her own public life. And then she died when she was 60 of a heart attack. But anyways, it's unfortunately a very tragic life, but I think that like, I'm sure is why Taylor Swift was so drawn to her.
Yeah.
To, you know, when she, I'd be so curious as to how she found her story. That's what I always want to know, especially doing this podcast. Cause I mean, I don't think she's like, you know, she's not like a Marilyn Monroe, where like everyone knows who Marilyn Monroe is.
Yeah.
She's kind of a niche does find.
This a lot though, like her song, The Lucky One, that I am obsessed with and no one talks about. She talks about like, I don't remember the name of her, but like that artist who left Madison Square Garden for, you know, for Rose Garden. And so I think she looks up a lot of the times, like what happens to women who were famous and then leave.
Yeah. Which I could understand why that would be a hyperfixation of hers.
Yeah. And I think maybe there's this eternal debate within her, like, how much longer do I want to do this?
I could be see so that curious.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like just like we're constantly looking for women artists, I feel like it's one of those things that once you start looking for it, you can't stop. And so that might be, you know, like the last Great American Dynasty, obviously it's because she moved into the house. But once again, it was kind of a woman who was in a very weird position in society, mm-hmm. and she found herself relating to it. And then same with like The Lucky One and now like Clara Bow. And even Stevie Nicks, like she went on hiatus for a really long time before coming back. Yeah. So I feel like she just kind of has a obsession there and
valid.
I get it.
Yeah. Also that I feel like that just means Taylor Swift would love our podcast. Taylor,
right? I know. Like you need some inspiration. We've got a lot of unknown women here for you.
So many. Also even just like with Louis Fuller, oh my gosh, I'm realizing how many ones we've gotten. She shouted her out at the Reputation tour.
She does it a lot. Like, yeah, I think there's no wonder that we love Taylor Swift. Like the amount of historical references that she throws in there, like even the mental asylum imagery, like you can tell she knows that that's what people used to do to women when they got over emotional. It's so historical. And that's another reason why I feel like it bothers me sometimes when people don't like those songs, because I'm like, you just didn't get it.
You don't get it. It's not for you.
Like, you don't know what she's doing here.
I feel that. The last thing I wanted to shout out, which is also, I mean, more than a muse, we talk about Greek mythology and the muses all the time, which is Cassandra. And if you don't know who this is, and now there is a song just called Cassandra, where she is a character, a person in Greek mythology that was a Trojan princess dedicated to the god Apollo and fated by him to utter true prophecies, but never to be believed. And in modern usage, her name is employed as rhetorical advice to indicate a person whose accurate prophecies, generally of impending disaster, are not believed. Which, just a side note, is the track list goes from the prophecy to Cassandra. Which is cool. Like, I just think that's so cool.
Sorry, I came across a reference to Cassandra when we were doing March Madness, but it never came up. Let me see if I can find it again. Also, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you've probably heard some mention of Cassandra, because the divination teacher, she is like supposedly like a granddaughter of Cassandra or something, so that she has prophecies, but like no one hears them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, or they like think she's crazy. Yeah, so it comes up in Harry Potter too. Okay. So it was a tweet from, her Twitter username was Ninky Minjaj, like playing off of Nicki Massage or whatever. But I don't think that's what she's going for. So I think her username is Kara Henke. So I'm going to think that that's what it is. But she said, "The book I'm reading just asked, why is the story of the boy who cried wolf told over and over again in our society and not the story of Cassandra, the woman who told the truth but was never believed?" Isn't that so good?
Wow. What a thought.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, we like to talk about, you know, the liar that kept saying things until people didn't believe him anymore, but not about the person who told the truth and no one ever listened to her.
Because we don't want to know that story.
It's not as fun.
But we're all very well acquainted with the man who keeps lying.
Oh, yes, we are. Sometimes personally.
Some of us more than others.
Yeah. So no, I was excited to see that one on the track list, and I really love that song. I feel like...
Yeah, that song was cool.
Yeah.
Actually, I do want to know specifically what she's talking about. I know it's like not always all about the lore, but I'm like, but what are you talking about?
Yeah. No, I feel like there hasn't been an album in a while where she hasn't had a reference to a woman from the past.
True.
Because even...
Did Midnight's have one?
Marjorie, right? Or was that...
Oh, that was Evermore.
Mm-hmm. Midnight's...
I'm trying to think.
I was thinking there was one. I feel like I'm forgetting something.
If someone's screaming at their listening device right now, sorry.
Yeah, they're like, this one, obviously. Because this isn't bringing up the bonus tracks. She does a lot of historical references. It's very fun.
Anything else? We're kind of ending on an anticlimactic note, but I'm losing my voice, so.
Yeah, you're good. There was one more thing I wanted to bring up that I loved. She had that pop-up Spotify thing, and she had a statue of Diana. A fun thing is that Diana is actually the Roman name for Artemis. So they are like the same goddess, Diana of Ephesus. And so she had a bust of her on one of the shelves. And it's tying back to like her lyric that was in a bonus track. And I was listening for it. So I was really confused when I finished the original album and then went, I didn't hear that anywhere.
Literally.
It came later. But the lyric that was like, only statues crumble if...
Oh, even statues crumble if they're made to wait.
Yes. Thank you. She had like the statue there. And apparently there's this story. So the original statue of Diana crumbled while waiting to be shipped to London in the 6th century due to years of neglect succumbing to passage of time and elements. And apparently she was also recently spotted wearing a purse that was inspired by Diana. And then I also wanted to point out the fact that like Diana or Artemis, their symbols are, which I've heard no one talking about this, are bow and quiver. She's an archer. And also like a crescent moon. Also, the fun thing about Artemis is that she's like seen as a protector of women. And also kind of like the lore behind Artemis is that she like never gets married. Like she's a really independent woman who is known for like protecting young women. She's like the goddess of fertility and like the moon and like cycles and everything. But like she's one of the Greek goddesses that never gets married. Yeah. And so I think it was kind of tie into that where she talks about the Diana story of like the goddess of fertility crumbling because she's forced to wait too long and how that probably feels when you've been in a 6-year relationship with someone who keeps promising to marry you and then
isn't going to in the end.
Never does. Whoa. So I just really loved that. And I haven't seen anyone talk about the fact that she's an archer and like, I feel like there's so many little details. I'm like, guys, no, you're missing part of it. Like, there's so much more to
that
this.
That is so cool. Yes.
Yeah. So I thought that that was really, really clever. And how a statue crumbles.
Amazing. I am a well-fed Swiftie. I was definitely up late listening last night and then had to wake up for work and have been going all day. So I'm about to go plop on my couch. But we had to record Friday night. We had to have the fresh reactions.
Yes, we did. Yeah, I've already listened to the whole thing like 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess we'll say like here was a slight introduction to some of the members of the Tortured Poets Department with Taylor Swift as the chairman. And you can tell us how you feel about it. Who else do you think might have been a part of it? I feel like Emily Dickinson could slide in there.
Totally.
We also have an episode on her.
Oh, what? So. How did we do that? Okay. we have women who... We haven't done a Sylvia Plath episode, but we did talk a lot about the bell jar last month. So
that's true.
Regardless, I feel like many of the women that we cover on this podcast would be members of the Tortured Poets Department, even if they are not poets themselves.
Yeah. I'm like thinking back about Camille Claudel. I love that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, you want to talk about a tortured poet?
There's so many of them. So many women.
Connie Converse.
Oh, Connie Converse.
Talk about a tortured poet. I'll make a list.
You should make a list. That's a good Instagram post.
I'll make a list. And then we could tell you who we think from our past episodes would be in the tortured poets department.
I'm so down for that. Anyways, until next week, we'll be back with more of our regularly scheduled program. It's been a weird April for us. But
it has. We're back in the swing of things. We'll be back. We'll have 2 historical artists back to back for the next 2 weeks, but then more topics and everything else coming.
It'll be
wonderful. So
Absolutely. Subscribe,
follow, rate, review, all of the above, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye.